Welcome everybody to another episode of Ruthless Aggression. I'm Pierce, Rob, Chris. I believe we're in the final week of the illustrious Thunderdome era.
We are.
Yep.
It's good to almost be out of the woods.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. It's been a journey, man.
Chris, what was your favorite moment of the Thunderdome era? I saw earlier this week, you're like, you'd probably go back and watch the early 2000s, 2010s. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you kind of wildin', but I'm not going to hold you.
I mean, you know, I think the first couple shows were pretty cool just because it was different from the soulless.
The one with Roman. I think the first show was the SmackDown before SummerSlam, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, Roman's always been in Thunderdome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, anything with Roman has been really, really just strong. And same with anything with Bianca and Bayley have all been terrific performers there. But I'm very glad to see them be able to escape this and hopefully never come back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's really the thing. Like, there are some moments that stand out, but it's not something you're going to revisit, I think, just because of the reason that they were there in the first place.
That's what I was thinking, because, like, you know, if I was like, oh, yeah, this was good, it was a reprieve, and then I'm going to remember what I was reprieving from, and it's like, oh.
Yeah.
That kind of takes the wind out of my sails.
No, like, you know, I appreciate the work that they did. I appreciate them, you know, not stopping for any of this, even though
They very well could have.
They probably should have, but I mean, they helped a lot of people. You know, AEW helped a lot of people just kind of keep that weekly routine. And I appreciate it, but yeah, I'm glad that, you know, we're back to fans now.
Yeah, final Thunderdome shows are this Friday for SmackDown and then Monday for Raw. And then it's back on the road. I was trying to find the date. Sorry, the 16th of July. And they're back on the road. I believe they do Dallas. Then Fort Worth for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which will preview next week, and then Houston on Monday. And they made a really interesting announcement earlier today, and that's the second SmackDown that's going to happen in front of fans. It's going to be a two-site show. It will still emanate from Cleveland, Ohio, but you know, Cleveland can't have anything nice. No, like, the trade deadline's coming. You guys can't have anything nice when you're 6.5 games out. So the other half of the show, which will include two matches, probably a segment as well, will take place at Rolling Loud Miami. So the marriage of pro wrestling and hip hop continues to get tighter. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. You know, I'm a big fan. I talked about it, I think, last week when they were doing those outdoor house shows in Europe in 2005. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't they run more outdoor shows? And, you know, here we are. It's going to be a cool environment. You know, I think a thing that people liked about WCW that WWE didn't take away in the past 20 years is that, you know, they ran unique venues, and it's pretty cool. And I'd like to see this continue.
Yeah, I hope that this is the start of something versus just something that's just a one-off. And I would like to believe that we may see more cool stuff like this in the future, and hopefully we do. But, you know, like you had said, it's cool to see hip hop and rap married with wrestling.
Yeah.
There's certainly plenty of audiences to, you know, tap into to broaden the horizons. And I think that it's good that they're spotlighting this and they're trying to highlight it and not just going to some, like, you know, country bumpkin music festival or whatever.
Like they always do.
Yeah.
Like they always do. Like they always kind of, you know, cater to, like, this is, it's good. It's good.
It's
Wild. It's a completely different vibe from what Hog Wild would bring. And it's something that, you know, we as wrestling fans who don't divulge into that culture have been asking for a very long time. And this is why when Bad Bunny had that phenomenal match and really the phenomenal run that he had, you know, when he came in, which is why it matters so much, because now you continue to bridge that gap to the point where we're going to see more of that style, you know, influenced into what we love, which is pro wrestling. So, that was one of the cool things that WCW used to do. Like, I wish they would do more shows, you know, summertime on a beach in Venice or whatever like that. Like, those are some cool shows. And then, of course, Hog Wild was interesting. But now we get to have this for us. So I think that's pretty fucking dope. Let's talk about the Great American Bash, another iconic WCW pay-per-view. We'll talk about another WCW moment in history a little while, but NXT's Great American Bash. What did you guys think of the show? I was thrown off by one of those matches, but I'll let you guys guess which one that was.
You know, I think it was pretty solid. I think they've had some better efforts in some respects. I don't know if there's anything like really like not clicking there, but like,
well, I mean, they have a champion and a women's champion who people don't really care about.
To be entirely fair, though, those two weren't on the show.
Well, Raquel was for a little bit, but she
did an interview.
But yeah, but, like, no, I get you.
I thought it was pretty fun. I thought Kyle O'Reilly too was really, really good again. I think their first one was a little bit better, but I think there were still two really, really standout matches. But yeah, I mean, I don't really. It was a show that, like, I mean, there's some things that you can take away from it, but it feels like it was a show that didn't really have like a hot ending or hot angle. But that's okay. Sometimes not every show is going to be like that. But you know, I think that NXT, that just shows how NXT's raised the bar for their expectations. That if they put on a good show like they did yesterday, it may not be at the level of some others.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't a takeover.
No.
You know, the next takeover is probably after SummerSlam, mm-hmm. when they'll start building to after next week, I would imagine, because they're going to make some changes. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to kind of see these shows where they're in a holding pattern, mm-hmm. which they have been, I think, for much of the past 2 or 3 months, where, you know, there are going to be call-ups at some point. You know, there's going to be a draft. So it's like, you know, they are going to need to make some changes at some point. I thought it was kind of weird not to see Diamond Mine at all yesterday, but, you know,
once again, there
was no real place for him, I guess.
No, exactly.
You know, it's cool that Tegan Nox is back. I hope she's not down there for long. You know, I guess cool that EO has a title again. You know, those belts have changed hands
a lot of times.
Well, yeah.
Just tag
team and, yeah, I'm looking forward to the stuff that they're going to do with LA Knight and Cameron Grimes.
Money in the Bank is coming up, like we said, a week from this Sunday. The main match, which obviously everyone's coming to see, is Money in the Bank. And we got some new entrants this week. Entering the Money in the Bank match on the SmackDown side for the women, we have a returning Zelina Vega. This was rumored for a while that she would be coming back, but this was before the recent cuts that came in WWE, one of them being, actually two of them being our former business partner Andrade and her current real life husband Tommy and Aleister Black. But Zelina's alone now. She can flex her wrestling skills on a show that desperately needs women on their roster.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. I think it'll be good for Zelina to be back. I don't know. I mean, they're going to put Liv in as one of the other SmackDown ones, and then
Mia Yim, I would imagine.
Mia Yim, yeah.
That's what I think.
Because
they're obviously doing something here with Sonya continuing to ignore her.
Yeah.
So there's a dynamic at play. It's either Sonya's going to enter herself in the match or whatever, or she's going to continue to play the role of evil authority figure against the underdog Liv, which is, you know, classic babyface heel stuff, which I appreciate. And I think it's good that Zelina's on her own and that she's back. I think that she's obviously very skilled when it comes to talking and promos. I think she sold me as a singles competitor with her promo the other night.
And the matches against Asuka weren't bad.
Yeah, they were pretty solid. She can obviously grow to, you know, improve and be better. And I think that she has the capability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's a good talent on the mic. She has good in-ring presence. I think WWE could use more women of her stature. You know, it's basically her, Alexa. Who else is super short? I mean, she's shorter than a bunch, but still, like, it helps to have them on the roster. It makes the matchups that more intriguing and the things that they do a lot fresher. So I'm happy she's back. We got two more to fill into this Money in the Bank ladder match to go along with Zelina Vega, Carmella, Nikki Cross, Alexa Bliss, Naomi, and Asuka. Now for the men, Kevin Owens beat Sami Zayn in a Last Man Standing match. Another great match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So, ho-hum. SmackDown's last two spots will be filled this upcoming Friday when Seth Rollins takes on Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura takes down a very bad, bad Baron Corbin.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this is a really good field. I think they've done a really good job with the field the past few years, ever since moving to eight people, really. They've done a really good job loading up the fields. You know, you can kind of eliminate some people who clearly are not going to win, and you're probably left with, you know, Riddle, Drew, Big E, and Owens. And I don't think Drew's going to win either. I would go with Big E or Kevin Owens. I mean, you know, they're guys that can hold the briefcase, that can be intriguing with it for an extended period of time, and, you know, both guys who could eventually beat Roman for the title.
Yeah, and I think that of the, you know, the two remaining spots, I think Nock is going to get in. I'm not so sure about Seth and Cesaro right now, though I think that the smartest play would be to have Cesaro beat him, just so Seth completely loses his mind and then goes after Edge for that reason.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't need to be in the ladder match and then go after Edge, because it's obvious that he's going to go after
him. Yeah.
He's agitated about it, so I think that they should probably make that play on that. So I won't be disappointed if Seth wins. I just think I think there's a better route to take if you want to get to where you need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, as it stands right now, Ricochet, John Morrison, Riddle, and Big E are joined by Kevin Owens. So we'll find out who's going to round out the Money in the Bank ladder match this upcoming Friday on the last Thunderdome SmackDown Fox ever has to deal with. No, they did not. It's a miracle that they were able to make the deals that they have during the pandemic, because Fox and NBC Universal were just not happy with the timing of everything. But hey, everybody lost. Shit happens. Let's move on to a very important anniversary in the history of professional wrestling. It was July 7th, 1996, when an egomaniacal son of a bitch named Terry Bollea, known across the world as Hulk Hogan, did the thing that nobody thought he would ever do. That was turn his back on the fans. Because there were two outsiders named Kevin Nash and Scott Hall that jumped ship from WWE to WCW to take over and thus spawned the NWO. And along with DX, a movement for people of our age, kids of our age, and folks that grew up watching pro wrestling, digesting it, showing up to school in the t-shirts, doing the two sweets and the suck it. As much as I hate Hulk Hogan and will never really love Hulk Hogan or try to give him love, this is more on the impact of the NWO. We could talk about, at the end of the day, the NWO just wound up being too convoluted and too much of a mess, and all that shit's true. But the impact that the New World Order had on professional wrestling is so profound, not just in what it did for, you know, WCW, what it did for those three, four, I guess, core six. I look at a core six of folks that were involved in that. But also, eventually, forcing Vince McMahon and WWE to step up their game. And without the NWO, who knows what professional wrestling looks like today?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, they deserve credit. They made wrestling cool for a couple of years. You know, you think of like Dennis Rodman showing up with them like the day after clinching the finals. Like, you're never going to see something like that again for so many reasons. And it was actually cool. Like, that's the thing. And
it was genuine. It wasn't, you know, some kind of mashed up thing that they brokered with someone's agent to come in. Like, nah, it was very genuine. That Rodman just, you know, fucked with Hogan and was like, yo, I want to be in this wrestling thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, fuck Hogan, but he deserves credit for being willing to turn heel. Because it's obviously a big risk for him, but if you watch, you know, when he first goes to WCW, it's kind of like the end of his WWF run, where clearly he needs to make a change.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because, like, he was kind of laboring a little bit there. So they definitely needed to make the switch. And I mean, they pulled it off. They pulled off the angle very well. I know this is a controversial talking point or whatever, but I don't blame Heenan for reacting how he did, because he always hated Hogan anyway. So yeah. It was him just being in character. I mean, like, oh, whose side is he on? Well, make sure he's not spoiling anything. He's mistrusting
Hulk Hogan, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I mean,
Hulk Hogan.
Good continuity and consistency.
Like, he technically did spoil it, I guess, but also,
the backstory of Hogan and Fiend right there is just a chef's kiss, though. It adds to the moment. Like, yeah, it makes you think he's spoiling it, but nah, deep down, you still don't rock with Terry. And he wasn't wrong to do so.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, but...
In the aftermath of it too, like they totally nailed a lot of the stuff that they did on those nitros that ensued from Disney MGM.
That first big segment, right? Was that Disney MGM when they like came in, tore the place up, beat up Randy Savage, went backstage, fucked up backstage, threw Rey Mysterio like a lawn dart into one of the fucking trailers. And
yeah,
I think there's Savage like clinging on for dear life.
Yeah, clinging on the limo.
Car.
Yeah,
the limo.
Yeah,
like some of the shit they would do was unforeseen in the annals of professional wrestling. And they made wrestling cool because it was cool to fucking show up in the black and white, perfect colors. It was cool to show up to school in a black and white and hit somebody with a two sweep. You know, they did embody cool. And they also had a wonderful... Eric Bischoff, I don't think gets the credit that he deserves for just being one of the greatest heels that have ever been in professional wrestling. Because, like, he's such a punchable fucking person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's particularly interesting. I don't want to go too off topic, obviously, here, because we have a show to do. But you were mentioning Bischoff and how... he deserves the credit, and I think he does. I had posed the question because right now I'm actually watching the Nitros from after Bash of the Beach all the way onward. I'm already up to 97. And I asked everyone, like...
97 is a pretty good year for Nitro.
Yeah. I asked, I was like, okay, those who were there watching intently at the time, when did you start to wonder if Bischoff was in on the thing? A majority of the people said they didn't know until they did the big reveal. Which tells me a lot about like how like viewing habits have changed, because like I'm watching these and some of the things that Bischoff is like saying, it's like, that's a little curious. That's a little interesting that he's saying it that way or phrasing things that way or like trying to deflect or whatever. And again, I don't want to, because I know Rob, you're going to start watching these soon too.
Yeah.
I don't want to, go off topic, but like that I found interesting too, because the reveal of Bischoff, being in on the whole thing was a really huge moment too, back late 4 months later in November.
Yeah, no, the NWO was just a classic entity, and we do the greatest factions, and it's cool for everyone to put DX. I'm not gonna hold you if DX to you is the greatest faction out of the world. My number one's always gonna be the Four Horsemen. Four Horsemen was the quintessential faction in terms of the hierarchy, the power structure. All for one, one for all. That's what they meant, and that's kind of the camaraderie that was established within factions. Well, number two is NWO, and I don't put too much weight into anything really once Starrcade 97 happened on onward, because WCW as a whole was just such a mess at that point in time. So I don't want to put too much of a weight on their history. Shit, if you want to put a weight on DX's history, you can too. Because everything after 2006 was just, what the fuck? But the NWO's impact on professional wrestling, like I said, is very profound. Because we don't know what wrestling looks like if they don't come along and kind of force Vince McMahon and WWE to step up their game. And to be honest, it forced them to look at Stone Cold as a more viable main eventer, because they had nobody that could push the edge at that time besides Stone Cold. You could say Shawn, but like Shawn was more risque edgy. Stone Cold was the edge that got the hook to bring folks in. So who knows if the NWO doesn't force them to step up their game and maybe look at Stone Cold and say, yeah, no, you're the guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, they the 1996 Game of Ring was, I think, like 3 weeks before Bash at the Beach. But, you know, clearly they're on this path with Austin. But I don't know that it would get to the level it got to without the NWO.
Yeah. So, yeah, NWO was awesome. That's really all I just wanted to peek out and do today. Let's move back to 2005 when the NWO was like 3 years dead. It's got to be about 3 years by now. Thank God.
Yeah.
Still funny to like think back and be like, yeah, Michaels was in the NWO. That was a weird time in the annals of history. Yeah, man, we're just coming off of the draft, and it's a big month for the WWE. There's so much happening in the month of July. We kick this off on July 4th for a 4th of July edition of Raw. Very rare back in the day. Was this? No, it was July 1st. And then the 4th was Thursday, am I right?
No, I think the 4th was Monday, because I remember, you know, watching the Michaels Hogan thing at my cousin's house.
Yeah. Okay. It was a Monday. Yeah, it was a
okay.
Monday.
I thought it was a Monday, but I know what we're going to talk about very, very later on. I think it happened like the day later. It was just like there was nothing that you could predict on that. But
yeah.
It's a very real situation that plays out. And WWE obviously had no idea how to stop it in real time. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. But first, we got some news breaking in the overall world of things.
Yeah. So, year of 2005 this week, for music, the top five in the Billboard Hot 100, number five was Don't Funk With My Heart by the Black Eyed Peas. Number four was Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani. Dropping to number three after debuting at number one is Inside Your Heaven by Carrie Underwood. Yeah, interestingly enough, debuting at number two is also Inside Your Heaven, this time by Bo Bice.
Okay.
Yeah, so they apparently both did versions of that song, and both of them charted very well. And back to number one is We Belong Together by Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
No video game news to speak of, although with notable debuts in the Hot 100 this week, a song that would later be featured on an MVP baseball soundtrack, The Bravery's Honest and Honest Mistake, debuted at number 97.
It already was on the soundtrack. It was on TV.
There it is. Yep. I couldn't remember if it was on 05 or 04, but there you go. And then also at number 98 was My Chemical Romance's Helena, So Long and Goodbye.
Yeah, great fucking song. Obviously, it's extremely iconic for the video. Very innovative video for at the time. I still come from an era where music videos matter, right? Like, I don't watch music videos, or the music videos aren't produced in the way that I was able to captivate people, because we're all, you know, going out and doing things a mile a minute. You know, there you can never have the box, you know, in this day and age. But, you know, I'm thinking back of just to when music videos used to matter, and Helena's definitely up there. It's one of the best ones. But a cool thing about this is, you guys know the bride in this is Wade Phillips' daughter.
Really?
Yes.
Damn, that is wild.
I did not know that.
Yes, the bride in the music video for My Chemical Romance is Helena. Is the daughter of former NFL head coach. I believe he is still, no, he's not defensive coordinator of the Cowboys anymore. Former Cowboys head coach, former Rams defensive coordinator, Wade Phillips. So,
yeah, damn.
And then for movies in 2005 this week, so we're obviously going into Friday and the weekend. Number five was Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which made $7.8 million on the weekend, $12.2 million throughout the week. Dark Water debuted at number four, making $9.9 million that weekend, $14.2 million overall for the week. Batman Begins was at number three, which made $15.2 million and $10 million on the weekend. War of the Worlds made $42.6 million, $30.4 million on the weekend. And then the number one movie in America that weekend, which also had debuted that week on July the 8th, making $56 million on the weekend, $77.4 million through the 14th, was The Fantastic Four.
Oh, yeah, no. The first Fantastic Four was fine. Like, yeah. I remember enjoying the very first Fantastic Four. It's when 2 comes along and they decide to turn Galactus into a cloud that I'm just like, all right, no, we're good on this. Mm-hmm. And then they decide to reboot it, Fox did, and made it all worse.
Indeed.
But yeah, the Jessica Alba version is definitely the one that I fuck with the most. Jessica Alba, Michael Chiklis, and then Chris Evans. The baby Chris Evans. He would go on to do greater things with an actual better Marvel character.
And then, of course, our first, like, I think, real major current event in the world that I think we've discussed, which, of course, will be important for context later. On July the 7th, 4 explosions were reported on the London Underground and bus system, which led to the entire transport network being shut down. A previously unheard of splinter group of Al-Qaeda claimed responsibility, though their involvement was not yet verified that day, and it left at least 50 people dead and roughly 700 others injured.
Yeah. Remember that very vividly. Scary shit if you're Londoner at that time, and you know, you have different spots of London that are being targeted, different train stations in London that are being targeted. Like, it was definitely something that obviously was unforeseen. Let's just get that out of the way, because SmackDown was taped after Raw, so taped on 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do get to that part, just remember the storyline at that point was already set in stone. There was no way that they could really change things up or really see the insensitiveness of it. But yeah, this was some wild shit. As is most of all the things that happened in this world.
Yes. And then we do have a few wrestling related things, and one we'll go back to during SmackDown.
Yeah.
So the first one was WWE announces negotiations with Brock Lesnar back on. So you know, put it on their website that he was meeting with Vince this week about returning. I vividly
remember that.
I remember it.
I went on the website and I saw that and I was like, what?
Yeah. Holy crap. Seems like the lawsuit is probably about over. But yeah, I mean, putting it on the website kind of makes it seem like he's going to end up coming back. And then he doesn't.
For like 7 years.
Yeah.
So,
this is kind of such a tease.
Yeah. Also this week, Jim Cornette was fired by WWE on July 7th from his job handling creative for Ohio Valley Wrestling. Paul Heyman will replace him. Jim Cornette basically got fired because Santino Marella laughed at the boogeyman.
Yes.
Which was not the reaction you're supposed to give. And then Jim Cornette slapped him.
Yep.
Oh, well, I mean, that's not the reaction that you're supposed to give to a fuck-up in the ring. So, yeah, I mean, he deserved that. And, like, it's Jim Cornette, so you're not going to hear any tears from me, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do know Paul Heyman was well liked on down in OVW. He went to OVW because they couldn't fucking stand him on the writing team anymore.
Yeah.
So it was a place for him to just get away, branch away from the McMahons, and just kind of focus on creating good wrestling and boosting talents. And there was talents down there at the time, you know, kids like CM Punk, the Crime Time, that were able to benefit from being in that system while Paul Heyman was there. So it was good for everybody. Jim Cornette. Who cares?
Yes. And then, so before we kind of get more into Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels, Hogan's apparently been telling media outlets that he signed a 20-year contract with WWE with creative control and $2 million a year, which none of this is true. I know he lies about stuff all the time, but, like, that doesn't even sound right.
King Cap. Good Lord.
Especially because he's in TNA in, like, 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no. Terry's a piece of shit. We all knew this. We had the blinders on because we love history and we love Hulkamania, that we weren't able to admit at the time, like, yo, Terry just be lying about shit. Like everybody got that one dude named Terry that you just can't trust. And he's pro wrestling's Terry.
Yeah. And then finally, before we get into the actual wrestling this week, we have about 15 releases to just run through real quick. Mark Jindrak, Maven, Shannon Moore, Akio, Billy Kidman, Gangrel, who still had a contract with them. All three Dudleys, Mordecai, Joy Giovanni, Kenzo, Hiroko, Matt Morgan, Charlie Haas, Jackie Gaeta, Don Marie, and Marty Jannetty all were released.
Black Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, not a ton of people that you're going to miss. I mean, I think of this group, you know, the Dudleys come back and Charlie Haas comes back and Akio comes back. That's about it, I think.
Kimmy comes back as a producer.
Yeah, but, you know, just kind of trimming the roster a little bit, I guess. You know, especially on the SmackDown side when you have, you know, Kennedy and Lashley waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so kind of is what it is. I mean, not going to miss most of these people.
Not at all.
All right, get into Raw. July 4th, 2005, from Sacramento, California. Carlito's here to open the show with the Cabana, as usual. Carlito says the crowd should be thrilled that a star this big came to Sacramento. But his guest tonight has a new reality show debuting on VH1, and it's Hulk Hogan.
I'm not Carlito, gonna lie, like, that's the only thing about Hogan is, like, I'll always pop for Real American. If you ever hear me pop for Real American, it's for Rick Derringer, not Terry Bollea.
I'm pretty sure Rick Derringer made like a MAGA version a couple years ago of it.
Well, like, why do you have to ruin it?
Carlito wants to know why Hogan didn't bring Brooke with, if he wanted to promote the show, and he keeps talking about her, which she's 16 here.
So damn horny for Brooke. Wait, where is she 16 at this time?
I think she's 17, but she's not 18. Oh, I know that much.
God.
Hogan sends Carlito out of the ring, and Kurt Angle comes out. Kurt says no one cares about Brooke. People should care about the fact that he made Shawn Michaels tap out at WrestleMania or Flair tap out last week. The people don't respect him. Last time Kurt faced Hogan, he made him tap as well, so he can do it anytime, anywhere. He'd also like to make Brooke tap out.
Oh, God.
Once again, this is about a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
Who just turned 17 in May.
Carlito and Angle beat up Hogan, but Michaels comes out for the save, and they retreat. Yeah. So Hogan knows best, coming this week. Not going to watch it.
Can we reset the timeline? Where is the TVA? So we have a variant in our... We have two variants in our midst.
Yeah. Yeah. Not great.
Oh my God. No, that means Brooke is going to be freshly 18 a year from now when Randy gets to... Gets the fucking with Hogan. Oh God, this is going to be bad.
So we open with Edge and Snitsky against Big Show and Kane, a match that was supposed to happen last week, but kind of got a little screwed up. I like Big Show and Kane; they're a good team. Big fan of them. They will be tag champions later this year.
Yeah, they're.
Kane hits a choke slam and pins Snitsky, and they gave them 10 minutes.
You know, they gave them 10 minutes, but the crowd was hot for most of the time here. They wanted to see Big Show, Kane. It was fine.
Yeah. Todd Grisham catches up with Shawn Michaels. He and Hogan will face Carlito and Angle tonight. So there's your main event.
Yep.
The Heartthrobs are here for a match with Viscera. They talk to Lillian before the match and say that they're going to beat Viscera for her. Lillian, as Viscera comes out, starts crying while announcing his name. Which was
great bit.
Good stuff. Heartthrobs go and kind of crotch him on the ring post, and they get disqualified, and they go to talk to Lillian again, but she's not impressed with them. Maria is here with Chavo Guerrero, who got dealt to Raw following SmackDown in the blockbuster trade, but he's not Chavo Guerrero anymore. He's Kerwin White now.
Okay.
Basically, just calls Maria stupid and then leaves. It's not good. I mean,
no part of it's good.
I don't think people talk about 2005 for being like as problematic as they should, because we're gonna get the Tim White stuff later this year too.
Oh God! I forgot about that. Tim White. I think Eddie's in Hell is towards. This might be the beginning of 2006, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it gets really bad. I mean, it's already bad. It's already horrible. But you know, it continues to be bad.
Even
going on through next backlash, because like we laugh and joke about the shit, but Vince teasing God is some really fucked up shit. No matter what religion you are, like some part of you is just like, yo, what is this white man doing?
Yeah. So we go to Hurricane Rosie and Super Stacy demonstrating firework safety, and it ends with Rosie catching on fire. It's good stuff. Big fan of that.
Yeah, just good comedic stuff.
I'm a big fan of all three. Then we move to Christian.
What's up?
So I'm a big fan of all three of them together. I enjoy the Super Stacy era of this trio.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Chris Jericho's here for the highlight reel. He saw Carlito's cabana earlier, and since Carlito had a big guest, he wants one too. And it's John Cena. Jericho wanted to congratulate Cena. He's doing great, but Jericho recently played at the Download Fest, so let's watch that instead.
They did show that, yep.
Download Fest would eventually return to WWE canon when NXT UK went there 2 years ago.
Yes.
Also, I believe NXT regular or proper went to and toured there a few times, if I recall correctly, back in like 15 and 16.
They did.
Cena said that this is a one-sided interview and went to leave, but Jericho kept him around, said that he's a legend and a bigger star than Cena. But Cena says Jericho is nothing without the WWE Championship. Cena said Jericho thinks he's on top of the world, but he's just an asshole. We all remember when Raw was really really was Jericho, but now Jericho is cheap. Jericho slapped him, then they brawled.
Yeah, you know, setting up that match. Then we get the Bikini Boot Camp, which is won by someone named Elizabeth, who will not win the Divas Search. Correct. So, you know. We go back out to Val Venus.
Real quick, isn't it very obvious who's winning the Divas Search?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the last one, you kind of were surprised a little bit, but this one, it is very clear that, like, Ashley's got it from the beginning. So yeah, we move on to Val Venus against Renee Dupree, which is a match on Raw instead of Sunday Night Heat.
They didn't do Sunday Night Heat.
True.
I was about to say, when does Heat die off? Or when does Heat die off and become like a web show?
I think it comes right around this time.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, right around this time.
Velocity 2, I believe.
Yes.
I think they're both taking off air at the same time.
Because, because Heat was on MTV still, right? And I know they go to Wrestling Society X at some point in this time. And Andy Milonakis, the Sunday night MTV lineup.
Velocity goes until next June.
Yes.
And then Sunday Night Heat, when does that... Or hold on. Their contract with Spike TV, it doesn't have a timeline for when it ends. It just says 2005. So at some time in 2005, Velocity's contract winds up being...
Webcast on WWE.com, September 30th, 2005 to May 30th, 2008.
That's what I have for Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah.
So I assume that's kind of around the time that the Velocity went off of Spike. Yeah, I remember when they left MTV. The last MTV one was, I think, the WrestleMania 19 episode. Mm-hmm. And then they went to Spike to do Sunday nights on Spike. But it sucks because like they really don't do a great job with the secondary shows that they have now. Like, we would care more about main event if you actually promoted an Ali versus Ricochet match instead of just throwing it on there without any consequence.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the couple times I've watched main event, it's not bad. Like,
no, they put good workers on there.
Yeah. Yeah, so we get Val Venus against Renee Dupree. Renee Dupree has black hair now and weird facial hair. He does not look great.
He does not.
Really does not.
Not the only person from La Resistance who's going to be appearing very soon.
Yes, all three La Resistance members are going to be singles workers now. Dupree wins with a roll-up. Angle and Carlito are with Todd Grisham. Carlito says no one comes to the cabana and disrespects him in Angle like that. It's not cool. Kurt says it's not cool, but something cool is that it's 4th of July. Kurt's grand finale tonight will be some fireworks in the way of making someone an ankle snap. Then we get Shawn Michaels and Hulk Hogan against Carlito and Kurt Angle. Michaels and Hogan get the victory, celebrate after, and then Shawn super kicks him. My God. Just a shocking moment in the moment.
Oh, it was.
You know, and this is the only time in Shawn's second run where he's not too cowardly to be a heel.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. We got a whole month to talk about Shawn's turn.
Yeah.
But wonderful fucking moment.
Plus, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff around this match too that it's gonna be fun.
So is Montreal in this month or is that August?
That's in 2 weeks.
Yep.
It's in 2 weeks. Next week is Continental Airlines Arena in New Jersey when he does Piper's Pit. I was there. And then 2 weeks from now is Montreal.
Okay. Let's do it. Let's go. By the way, where is the Great American Bash taking place at? I know it's this month.
I want to say Baltimore. No, Buffalo.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense then. Yep. They'll just come back down from Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they're not going to have a Great American Bash in Canada. That makes some fucking sense.
Yeah, just go across the Niagara Falls and they'll be fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was Raw. You know, it's memorable.
It's very memorable. The final segment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's all you can ask for.
A jaw-dropping, really. Like, I remember just being fucking floored. But, yeah. And for the first time we saw Sean as a heel since he came back, you know, I think everyone really always wanted Austin versus Hogan, but this was a good consolation for us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the problem with Austin and Hogan is I don't think they were ever able to work out any sort of...
Because that was rumored for Mania 22.
Yeah.
But they couldn't work anything out, which sounds about right.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So taking a brief break from wrestling here to talk about sports in 2005 this week. Kind of a slow week. The Tour de France is going on. And, you know, baseball is heading into its all-star break. London was named as the host site for the 2012 Summer Olympics back on July 6th. And 2 days later, baseball and softball were dropped from the Olympics. The two sports that were considered to replace them were golf and rugby sevens. This, of course, didn't eliminate them from future contention for the Olympics, which they're back for Tokyo, even though they probably shouldn't be doing them.
Yeah.
But for now, they're dropped. So that was a major news item that happened. In addition to that, on July 8th, Michelle Wee missed the cut at the John Deere Classic. She had shot a 70 in the second round, which prevented her from becoming the first female golfer in tour history to play into the weekend. I know that back then there was a lot of intervention there going on between her and Danica Patrick, Soren Stam also. So this was something that I thought was just notable to toss in there. So, like I mentioned, we're at the All-Star break for the 2005 MLB season. And right now, the division leaders are in the American League, the Boston Red Sox, who are two up on Baltimore, 2.5 up on New York, and 5.5 up on the Jays, who, by the way, Roy Halladay had broken his leg after Kevin Mensch hit a comebacker on it. He is done for the remainder of the year.
I don't remember that.
I feel like I halfway remember that, because he was supposed to be the AL starter in the All-Star game, and cruelly enough, he got hurt.
Who was this again?
Roy Halladay.
I feel like I vaguely remember that.
Same.
That was 2005. That's because he went on a DL and or IL now in 2004, and then I remember his leg getting fucked up. Yeah.
So, and then the White Sox currently have the best record in baseball. They are 57-29 and currently 9 up on Minnesota.
You know, the weird thing about that is that team never felt like it was that good. And, you know, they're going to run.
We're hating like shit right now.
They're going to run through the playoffs. You know, they're going to.
Okay. Were the Sox not that good, or were the rest of the league just not that good? Because that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to give the Sox their credit, but, you know, to go wire to wire, basically dominating the postseason, like, there's no way you go 11-1 and your starters go deep in the fucking every single ball game. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody else really measured up, and nobody really measured up the year after either, because look at how fucking Cardinals won the chip.
Yeah, this exactly.
I'm not putting an asterisk on it. I'm just saying, like, the rest of the league went up to par.
So. Yeah.
Well, that's fair. I mean, there were some really bad champions for a while
So the Angels are currently leading the AL West at 52-36. They are 5 games up on Texas and 7.5 up on Oakland. And right now, Minnesota is your wild card leader at 48-38, up 1.5 on Baltimore, up 2 on Texas. the Yankees and Cleveland. Meanwhile, in the National League, the Nationals currently lead the NL East at 52-36, and they are 2.5 up on Atlanta. So in their first year of existence, they so far are your division leader. I am curious to see how that turns out. In the Central, the Cardinals currently have the best record in the NL at 56-32, and they are 11.5 games up on the Houston Astros. And out west, the Padres are 48-41, leading the terrible NL West, and up 5.5 on Arizona. And then Atlanta currently leads the wild card at 50-39. They are 4.5 up on the Marlins. And then just real quick here, going to go over your Triple Crown leaders in both the pitching side and hitting side. Derek Lee is currently leading all of Major League Baseball in batting average and home runs. He's hitting .378 with 27 homers. Andrew Jones also has 27, by the way. Leading the AL is Mark Teixeira with 25. Brian Roberts is leading the American League in hitting with a .345 batting average. Manny Ramirez leads in RBI with 80. Carlos Lee of the Brewers has 76. Meanwhile, in the pitching department, your wins leaders are Chris Carpenter, Dontrell Willis, and John Garland, who all have 13 wins apiece. Roger Clemens is your ERA leader at 1.48. The aforementioned Roy Halladay has an ERA of 2.41, which leads the American League. Then Johan Santana has a ridiculous 143 strikeouts at the break. Pedro has 138, which leads the National League. He's on the Mets now.
Yeah. You know, Derek Lee was really a bright spot for the Cubs that year, and then Albert just did his thing. Yeah. I mean,
yep.
You know?
That's all you can say.
All right, we can get into SmackDown here.
This is quite the show.
Yeah. SmackDown aired July 7, 2005, also from Sacramento. JBL's here to open the show. Last week, six of the best sports entertainers got into the ring. At the end, JBL was the only one left standing. What happened to him last week makes the Montreal Screwjob look like a parking ticket. He's not afraid of Batista, and at 2 weeks of the Great American Bash, he'll get his title back. Keeps talking, and then his own music plays. And his limo comes out, and the Blue World Order come out. Steven Richards introduces them. Blue meaning he's JBL, John Blue Lamefield. Nova is the Bashams, or Bash Me. And Steven Richards is the chief of staff, Blue Wheat, which is kind of offensive.
Kind of, yeah.
JBL says they're embarrassing him, but Stevie says JBL did that on his own at One Night Stand. JBL runs them down, says they're a joke, and Blue Meanie challenges JBL to a match tonight. JBL accepts, and the BWO spray paint his limo. This is the most entertaining Steven Richards ever was in this company.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. You've never watched the 1999 and 2000 stuff. He was pretty entertaining.
That's fair. We get Chris Benoit against Booker T. Number one contender match for the United States Championship.
Standard fare for these two. Very fun match. Benoit won with the crossface.
Yeah, they're going to have like 12 more matches this year.
So. Yeah, because they do a best of seven.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio goes to Eddie Guerrero's locker room. Rey is asking Eddie to reconsider revealing the secret. Eddie's done some pretty messed up stuff, but this is too far. Eddie says it's not about what Rey wants, it's about what Eddie wants. And Eddie needs a tag partner tonight, and it should be Rey. Rey has no interest in that, but he's going to do it anyway, so Eddie doesn't reveal the secret. It was good stuff. Just excellent.
Has a vice grip over him.
Yes. Muhammad Hassan tells Teddy Long that he's done being disrespected and humiliated. Hassan was never pinned and didn't tap out last week, so he should be number one contender. Teddy Long says he has a point, and he can have a match with The Undertaker at Great American Bash for the number one contender spot. But tonight, Daivari will go one-on-one with The Undertaker.
The Undertaker. He hasn't reached this portion of his inflection for The Undertaker yet. It's good. No. It's getting there.
So we move on to JBL against Blue Meanie in a no disqualification match. Obviously, JBL gets the upper hand for a while and beats up all the BWO and gets a chair, but Steven Richards gets in and hits JBL with a chair right in the head. Blue Meanie does a moonsault, but he...
You should call it a moonsault.
He should. JBL kicks out at two. And then hits Meanie with clothesline from hell, but Batista comes in, spine busters JBL, and drags Blue Meanie onto him for the victory.
So there you go.
Yeah. There's a payoff for that. Yep,
there's a payoff for that.
Actually, the BWO will also get a pay-per-view payoff, I believe, which...
I think you're right.
At the Great American Bash. I believe you're
correct. Yes. So we move to Eminem versus Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio for the WWE Tag Team Championships. Eddie Frog Splash Nitro had the match won, broke up his own pinfall and tagged Rey in and told him to finish it. He covered him and he kicked out. Rey went for the 619, but Eddie pulled him down and went and got a chair and sat ringside to watch Rey do this 2-on-1. And to Rey's credit, he fights back. He fights valiantly. He hits the 619 on Mercury and he drops the dime, goes for the pin, but Eddie comes in and just stomps on him and then just sat back and watched Eminem hit the snapshot for the win. And then Eddie made Rey hold the ropes for him to leave. This was a good match and also incredibly entertaining stuff. Just more advancement in this angle, which honestly, I remember it being really good, but I don't remember it being this good.
Yeah.
This is really, really fun stuff.
Christian is with Steve Romero, got screwed over last week, and he's the only person to ever main event Raw and SmackDown in the same week, which is almost certainly not true.
I think it's not true.
Christian's back in the main event tonight as well, though, and he's facing Batista. Then we get William Regal against Matt Morgan, but while Regal's making his entrance, the Mexicools come out and almost run him over, so he just kind of stands to the side, and they go to the ring and beat up Matt Morgan with a rake and various other things, and that was great. Matt Morgan will no longer be on WWE television, and the Mexicools declare war on everybody. You know, the rumor is they released all these people to bring Brock back.
Really?
Yes.
They cleared off cap space.
Yeah. So it really would be interesting to see what happened in those negotiations that it didn't, because they clearly think that he's coming back.
I did not know that until just now. That's really funny.
Yeah. Okay. Daivari against The Undertaker. Actually, before this, we get a segment backstage with Hassan and Daivari saying that Daivari's going to be a sacrifice tonight. And, you know, it'll all pay off. Mm-hmm. You know, problematic right there, but, you know, let's go with it. Hassan forces Daivari into the ring. Undertaker hits chokeslam and a tombstone for a quick victory. Hassan kneels on the ramp and 5 masked men come out, beat Undertaker down, and choke him out with piano wire. And then Hassan comes in and puts him in the camel clutch. Okay. So it's probably not the best angle to run anytime.
No.
But particularly the day of a terrorist attack when, you know, it's a tape show and you could have just... Is anything lost if they just edit this out entirely?
Absolutely not.
How much time do they have to even make that call? And how do you not make that call immediately when you know you have the option?
Yeah, because the attacks are on the Thursday, so I get that. But they're definitely, like, in the more... If not in the morning, like when they're in the early afternoon, like I would imagine it happened like in the morning in London. So yeah, they had at least 12 hours. You know, according to Bruce Pritchard, it was a joint decision by, you know, UPN and WWE to just keep it in. You know, they ran a crawl on the bottom of the screen.
I remember the crawl. I remember watching this. I remember watching this up in upstairs at my nana's house in the room where I had a TV. And I do remember the crawl. I vividly remember the crawl as the angle was happening.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, like the damage control they try to do. You know, Kevin Dunn said, we're very proud of our product. We try to be sensitive with everything. We're firmly in the entertainment business. A company spokesman said, we feel bad about the timing, but people will see what happens next week as it gets straightened out. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, you didn't need to do this, especially not that day.
No, they could have edited this out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you said, there's never a good time to run an angle like this, especially considering that, you know, it was, you know, heavily implied that, you know, they did the wire or whatever, just like with, you know, what happened to the journalist, Nick Berg.
Yeah.
So there was never a good time to do this. Now, I know you had said, would it have mattered if they didn't have masks on? I don't know, but also if they did those same things, it probably would not have mattered. No.
Well, I mean, also if they don't have masks on, it's just a bunch of white dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like Val Venus and I think the Shane twins and
Paul Burchill and Mike
Knox
Hedding,
is one of
Mike
them.
Hedding, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. It's not a good idea. You know, they got mainstream attention for it. Tucker Carlson and Max Kellerman had a debate about it, which didn't go well. I mean, it's just, it's not great. You know, it cost Muhammad Hassan his career. And, you know, it seems like he is in a good place right now, though. So that's good. But yeah, just they didn't have to do this. And it would have been very easy to just cut this out and come back and think of something else for next week that maybe is less offensive. And, you know, part of the argument, too, is, oh, you know, they do it on 24 or whatever. But that's not really the same, though, either. And I don't know. Like, if they did it last year, then it probably would have been fine. But, you know, just still in poor taste.
Yeah. If that happens. It's still way too close to 9/11 to be pulling that one out of the bag, you know.
And, you know, to Kellerman's credit, I'm reading his quote. He had said, I know this is just for a show, but his point of view was, my objection is not from being a Muslim or along the lines of racial stereotyping because they were clearly shown to be terrorists, but I mean, they simulated a beheading. Not only was this segment in very poor taste, but again, anything that makes a caricature out of this issue or trivializes it, this is a completely serious issue. There's no room for it to be trivialized.
Yeah.
And that's fair.
Yeah. So I get why people had such an issue with it. But then we move on to Batista and Christian. I mean, it's good kind of back and forth, but Batista ultimately gets the victory with the Batista bomb. It kind of feels like how things always went for Christian. JBL and Orlando Jordan come out and attack Batista. Batista fights back, and JBL leaves Orlando on his own, and Batista hits another Batista bomb as JBL watches on. So, just to conclude here, and it's very clear at this point, I think the plan for SummerSlam is Batista against Hassan or Batista against Brock. Because, you know, they run the same match twice instead. So, yeah, it kind of screwed things up for him.
A bit, yeah. A bit. And I know the Raw plan that you told me about yesterday kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, they were planning to do Cena against Edge as well, but something that happens next week throws a wrench into that. So,
And I think that, honestly, that's a blessing for Edge because, like, yeah, he's rolling right now, but if they pivot to that early, I don't know if it hits the same way that it did.
Yeah.
Me neither. All right, who's our King of the Ring for the week?
Blue Meanie.
Yeah, Blue Meanie got a big win. There we go.
Yeah, he got his revenge.
Yeah, I'm gonna include the entire BWO because Stevie leaned in on that shot and he hit that bitch in the McCovey Cove. So
I also like they were very careful to like not show Nova too much because you're not supposed to know who it is.
Yeah, that was funny. And I mean, they could have poked fun at it. To me, like, Simon Dean hadn't debuted technically on SmackDown yet, so you could have poked fun at it. But, yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, let's get up out of here. When we come back next week, we will talk about the very first live show in front of fans since WrestleMania on cable network TV in about 15, 16 months. We're finally out of this thing, thank God. Can't wait to finally really get the dive back into this with some excitement with the fans coming back and being involved. We'll also talk about Money in the Bank. We'll have a clearer picture of who's all going to be in the matches. We'll also see, we'll also talk more in depth about the Universal Championship match, Roman Reigns versus Edge. It's also good to see Edge actually having matches on TV, by the way. And then, of course, Kofi Kingston versus Bobby Lashley, WWE Championship, everything in between. I am at Cameron Santo. Rob's at RobMcNeil31. Chris is at Chris and Novak. You can listen to these guys with a Ruthless Aggression recap. They and Oz went back to watch Slammiversary 2005, which I've been trying to remember what show that was. I feel like that might have been a Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles match on there. So they had that, and then also King of the Ring 96, the iconic King of the Ring 96. That's up right now on your main feeds. We'll also have the July edition of the WWE Top 25 coming up this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. Patreon.com/barberschairnetwork. $10 gets you the all access tier. We got a new 4040 club also coming up later on this week where we'll talk about, goodness gracious, I don't even want to check the score, and it's probably good that I don't. We'll talk about the Cubs slide. We'll talk about how the White Sox really just can't catch a break with injuries. We'll also talk about who we think is the biggest star in baseball right now, heading into the All-Star break. So be on the lookout for all of that. Once again, thank you for listening. Let's talk about actual wrestling for the actual fans next week when we come back to do the show. Yeah. Let's do that next week on Ruthless Aggression. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you guys later.